The air seemed empty of smell, except for a faint tang that he could not quite place. "That doesn't matter," said Tom. The blackness did not matter either, because by now he knew the garden by heart. Blindfold, he could have found his way. Where should he go first? Across the lawn to the yew trees. He sprang forward and began running. His bare feet fell onto cold stone. He knocked against a tall metal thing, and its lid fell off and rang upon the stone again. He shied away and still ran on in the direction of the yews, but long before he reached trees, crashed into a wooden fence, and knew that the tang he smelt had been of creosote. And this was the creosoted fence enclosing the backyard where the ginger-bearded man kept his car and where the tenants kept their dustbins. He turned then and ran like a rat with the dogs after it, back into the house. He could not have intended to make another attempt, for he did not close the garden door after him. He could not have intended to go back to bed, for he halted in the middle of the hall by the grandfather clock, sobbing. The grandfather clock ticked coldly on. A light had gone on somewhere along the landing upstairs, and by it he could see a figure coming down the stairs. He knew in his heart that it could not be she, and yet he screamed to her for help. "Hattie! Hattie! Hattie!" All over the big house, tenants were startled from their sleep. Tom's call, sharp like a bird's warning, reached up, even to the topmost flat, and woke Mrs. Bartholomew from a dream of her wedding one midsummer day, some 60-odd years before. The cry seemed to call her, and Mrs. Bartholomew, muddle-headed with sleep like her tenants, put on the light and began to get out of bed. Alan Kitson jumped the last few steps of stairs and ran forward and caught Tom in his arms. The boy sobbed and fought as though he were being taken prisoner. Then his uncle felt his body go limp, and he began weeping softly now, but as though he would never stop. Uncle Alan carried Tom upstairs to where his aunt was waiting. Then he went down again to shut the garden door and to reassure the ground-floor tenants. Then he went up to his own floor and explained to the other tenant that his wife's nephew had been sleepwalking. Finally, he mounted to Mrs. Bartholomew's flat. He found her with the front door open, but on a chain. She was pale and trembling and agitated by the crying that she had heard. She listened to his explanation, but without seeming to believe or understand it. She asked wilder and wilder questions, and asked the same ones over and over again. At last, Alan Kitson lost his patience with her, bade her an abrupt good night, and hurried back to the flat below. Aunt Gwen had got Tom back into bed, and was giving him hot milk and aspirin. She came outside when she heard her husband in the hall. "Ask to stay with him until he sleeps," she said in a low voice, "for he seems quite ill with shock. I suppose it was his waking up and finding himself standing there in the dark all alone, not knowing he was in the hall, or at least not knowing how he got there."
"Look," said Uncle Alan,
and he held up a pair of old-fashioned skating boots and skates.
"He was carrying these."
Aunt Gwen was dumbfounded.
"What can have possessed him, even in sleepwalking?"
"And where can he have even got them? That's what I'd like to know," said Uncle Alan,
examining them with curiosity.
"They've been oiled and polished recently, yet they don't look as if they've been used for 50 or 100 years.
I wonder." "You mustn't question him, Alan. Promise me that. He's not really fit to be worried."
"Oh, very well. If they're his skates, and they're certainly not ours, I'd better put them with his things for tomorrow, before he leaves."
Aunt Gwen was going back into Tom's bedroom, but she remembered something that had puzzled her.
"When he called out, it sounded from up here as if he were calling someone."
"What, he screamed for his father, you mean, or his mother?"
"No, I thought it was someone's name."
"Ah, it couldn't have been. He just screamed."
Sometimes before in his life, Tom had gone to sleep in disappointment or sadness, but always he had woken up to a new day and a new hope. This time he found that the morning was only a continuation of the night and the day before. Even as his mind stirred awake, the horror and grief of yesterday were already there. This was Saturday. He had lost his chance. He had lost the garden. Today he went home. The tears fell from his eyes, and he could not stop them falling. Aunt Gwen came to him early and put her arm round him.
"But, Tom, tell me, what is the matter?"
Now, at last, he wanted to tell her to share, and perhaps thereby lessen his grief. But now it was too late. His story was too long and too fantastic for belief. He gazed at her in silence and just wept. Tom had breakfast in bed like an invalid. Over their own breakfast, the Kitsons discussed him.
"He really can't make that long train journey on his own in this state," said Aunt Gwen. "Couldn't we drive him home by car?"
Alan Kitson was perfectly willing. He worked on Saturday morning, so they could not start until the afternoon. A telegram was sent to the Longs. Tom got up and dressed very soon after breakfast, because lying in bed and thinking was worse than being up could possibly be. He came out into the little hall just as his uncle was going off to work. His uncle and aunt told him of the change of plan, and Tom nodded. Uncle Alan said goodbye and went out the front door, and Aunt Gwen shut it after him. Almost immediately, however, she and Tom heard his voice in conversation outside, and in a few minutes he was back again, looking annoyed.
"God, is that old woman?" he said. "Why can't she let well alone?"
"Oh, Mrs. Bartholomew, what does she want now?"
"An apology for the disturbance last night. Of course, I gave her one at the time, and I apologise again just now, but she says the boy himself's got to go to her."
"Oh, I wouldn't dream of sending him," said Aunt Gwen. "It's outrageous of her to expect it. I shall tell her so."
Fully roused against Mrs. Bartholomew, Tom's aunt made a move to the front door. Her husband stopped her.
"Careful, Gwen. She is the landlady. If we upset her, it could be very awkward."
"Oh, the same."
"I'll try to soothe her myself," said Uncle Alan.
"No, no," said Tom suddenly in a dull, steady voice. "I'll go. I ought to. I don't mind."
"I shan't let you, Tom," said Aunt Gwen.
"I'll go," he repeated. It was like getting up instead of staying in bed crying. You had to do these things, even unpleasant things. In a strange way, there was a relief in doing them. There was something in Tom's manner that made his aunt and uncle respect his decision. So a little later that morning, Tom climbed up to Mrs. Bartholomew's flat and rang the front doorbell. Mrs. Bartholomew opened the door and was face to face with him. She was just as he had expected her to be, old and small and wrinkled with white hair. All that he had not been prepared for were her eyes. They were black, and the blackness disturbed him, that and the way they looked at him.
"Nils,"
she said. "I've come to say I'm sorry," Tom began. She interrupted him.
"Your name is Tom, isn't it? Your uncle mentioned it. What is your other name?"
"Long," said Tom. "I've come to apologize."
Tom Long.
She'd stretched out a hand and touched his arm with the tips of her fingers, pressing with them so that she might feel the fabric of his shirt and flesh under the fabric and the bone beneath the flesh.
"Oh, you're real. A real flesh and blood boy. Oh, the Kitson's nephew. And in the middle of last night..."
Tom, trying not to be frightened by this queer old woman, said, "Look, I'm sorry about last night."
"You screamed out in the middle of the night. You woke me up."
"I've said I'm sorry."
You called out," she insisted. "You called a name."
She lowered her voice. It sounded gentle, happy, loving. Tom could not say all the things it sounded that he had never imagined for Mrs. Bartholomew.
Oh, Tom," she was saying, "don't you understand? You called me. I'm Hattie."
The words of the little old woman were meaningless to Tom. Only her black eyes compelled him. He allowed her to draw him inside her front door, murmuring to him softly and delightedly.
He was in the tiny hall of her flat, and facing him was a Gothic barometer of familiar appearance.
That's the barometer from the Melbourne's hall, said Tom, as if in a dream.
She was pushing him ahead of her into the sitting room, and facing him, from over the mantelpiece, was a large brown portrait photograph of a young man with one of those ordinary faces that you remember and recognise again. Tom recognised this face. He had last seen that face by moonlight.
That's young Barty, he said.
Yes, said Mrs. Bartholomew. Her likeness, taken soon after we were married.
With difficulty, Tom's mind took in the meaning of what had been said. Young Barty and the late Mr. Bartholomew were one and the same. He sat down heavily upon a chair and faced her.
Oh, you married young Barty. Who were you?
I have been telling you, Tom, said Mrs. Bartholomew patiently. I am Hattie.
But Hattie was a girl when Queen Victoria reigned.
I'm a Victorian, said Mrs. Bartholomew. What is odd about that?
But Queen Victoria came to the throne in 1837.
Well, that was a long time before I was born, said Mrs. Bartholomew. I was born toward the end of the Queen's reign. She was an old lady when I was a girl. I am a late Victorian.
But I don't understand, said Tom. I don't understand. The garden gone, and yet the barometer here, and you say you were Hattie.
What happened after the day I skated to Ely with Hattie, the last time we saw each other?
Oh, the last time, said Mrs. Bartholomew.
No, Tom, that wasn't the last time I saw you. Have you forgotten?
She looked at him earnestly.
I see you don't know all of our story, Tom. I must tell you.
Tom listened as she began her tale, but at first he listened less to what she was saying than to the way she was saying it, and he studied closely her appearance and her movements. Her bright black eyes were certainly like Hattie's, and now he began to notice again and again a little gesture, a tone of the voice, a way of laughing that reminded him of the little girl in the garden. Quite early in Mrs. Bartholomew's story, Tom suddenly leaned forward and whispered,
"You were Hattie. You are Hattie. Oh, you're really Hattie."
She only interrupted what she was saying to smile at him and nod.